You're listening to the Ready, Set, Cloud podcast, a show about trending and difficult topics on serverless and in the cloud. Today, we're talking about Java. Not your morning cup of joe, but the programming language that allegedly runs billions of devices worldwide. I have Vadim Kazulkin with me to talk about SnapStart, optimizing the Java runtime, and weigh in on whether serverless developers should start learning Java. Ready, set, let's go. The last time I installed Java on my machine, I was presented a window that said 3 billion devices run it. That's a staggeringly large number, and it makes me wonder how true that statement is. So I went to the developer portal for Java users and saw the numbers actually closer to 56 billion. Naturally, I wondered how that number reflects in the serverless world. So I brought Vadim Kazulkin on the show to talk about it. Vadim, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Alan, for inviting me. So happy to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you. So you're the head of development at IP Labs. You're an AWS community builder. You're co-organizer of a Java and a serverless meetup group. Not to mention, you're always sharing captivating articles and writing some yourself. Where do you find the time?
Oh, that's probably a very interesting question. The big motivation for me to stay technical, because as a head of development, I found myself in this situation, especially in the last years, that it's more about people. And of course, the developers are very special. If you just lose this technical understanding, they stop talking to you. So you need both. And this was for me the motivation of how I can keep up. I cannot develop 40 hours, but at least to be technical savvy and just to at least grasp the concepts and all that stuff. So it was kind of motivation for me also to prepare the talks. Sometimes related to what we are doing, closely related. Sometimes it's from the personal interest, from the past, and so on. And that helped me to stay technical. And then I became an AWS community builder, and that also gives kind of obligations to share the knowledge, just to be confirmed for the next year. Then you will be invited to the conferences. There you talk to amazing people, you meet the amazing people like you, Alan, that we meet in London. That's how it works.
That's awesome. I love that you are doing your best to stay technical and stay relevant. I feel like it helps make better, more informed decisions, since you're a major decision maker at IP Labs, right?
Yeah, kind of head of development behind the CEO. We don't have CTO role. We are a company, 70 people. My company is doing the business with the photo products, like Calendars, Photo Book of the Year, prints, posters. So we are dealing with a lot of pictures, and then many people buy the stuff before the Christmas, and then we run into that peak problems, and that was the decision to go to the cloud. And that was for me kind of, as we decided, we didn't know what it is. Yeah, like, oh, cloud should solve it. And AWS was 2016 or something like this, 17, as we started the major provider. So we started with that, and the serverless then emerged, and we tried something out with success. And yes, the developers like it, system administrators not so. So that was the situation, but yeah.
Yeah. So really the big thing that I want to know is, obviously I fully support the decision to go serverless, but the part that just makes me wonder, why Java? How did you get into that? And why did you carry that over into serverless development?
We are Java developers, so we tried Java with serverless first. Of course, the application was okay for synchronous programming. It was invoices for our customers. We are in the business to business, like white label, so we need to invoice the customers. And that was the application there. On the first of each month, there will be heavy computation for all customers. So latency doesn't matter. The project manager comes into the office and see the email with PDF attached. So the kind of cold start was not the problem, but we all noticed it was kind of without any optimization, more than 20 seconds with Java.
Wow.
Yeah, but of course it was then the question, okay, that with that application, it's okay. And even cost is not a concern if you are only doing the stuff on the night. So yeah, so we tried with Java and we had the problems. So generally speaking, several people stayed with Java. But of course, what happened to us, at least in the serverless world, that the people tried Node.js in the end. So we have kind of mixed situation, and we are lucky that the developers said, okay, we have big applications for Java, so we need to maintain it. But mostly we went Node.js, TypeScript stuff. But me and several people tried to be on the what will happen with Java. It's a huge community on the serverless. So that's why it was for me the motivation to follow all that improvements. Now we realize with SnapStart and other stuff, Java became more accessible.
Why would somebody use Java and their Lambda functions outside of it's a programming language I already know and am proficient in? Why is that a good choice?
So maybe if you did not develop Java, you should not start serverless with Java. There are really not too much reasons. Take some JavaScript derivative, you will be happy. But of course, if you have savvy Java developers, which are very productive and know the frameworks, it can become costly to relearn. Yeah, we had to go the step because there were no alternatives. But now you can read, there are lots of presentations from amazing people. You will not probably get that cold start down to JavaScript all the way, but you can get them down that is acceptable for you. So you can start something new and then use Java. Nobody will pay because you would like to use Java and rewrite. It's not how the things work. You cannot argue for that.
Yeah. I know there's some pretty large companies that use Java in production, like Disney is probably one of the biggest ones that I know that goes heavy into Java development. So from what you said, for why would I use Java? Really, the answer that I think that I heard was because there are 56 billion devices that run it, and there's a large bandwagon to follow. Is that right? There's nothing like specifically to Java that makes it a better runtime for certain workloads or anything?
I think Java can deliver you many things. That's probably the reason why people just stay. It's very stable. It's backward compatible as a language. Frameworks can break compatibilities, of course, with it, but this is the promise of Java. Yeah, you need to upgrade just to remove the security vulnerabilities to be more productive with the underlying language features like JavaScript that develops. But all these breaking changes, yeah, but we know them from AWS SDKs as well, I think.
Yeah. Let's talk about cold starts a little bit. I hate camping on cold starts because I feel like we talk about it too much. I know in a sustained serverless workload in production, cold starts account for generally less than 1% of invocations. And we talk about it like they account for 99%. But it's worth talking about when we talk about Java. Now, you said when you first started getting into serverless with Java, the cold starts were taking about 20 seconds. Is it still that slow if you just use the native Java runtime and you hit a new invocation?
So generally speaking, if you use simple Java as a language, I think now you can optimize it to the cold start itself between 3 and 5 seconds. And if you have this public facing application with hundreds of requests per second, then even 1% may hit you in the end. Yeah, you need to take care even about 1% or even less. So that's the situation that you will still have it. We now see that even AWS will pre-warm your functions, even if you don't call them. That's called proactive initialization that can reduce the cold start even further from that 1%, because sometimes you will hit the pre-warm optimization. There are these two other techniques like GraalVM native image, which is ahead of time compilation. Native image is, of course, this everything is pre-bundled and you can pre-initialize in terms of memory consumption, which is also a cost factor. You can win and you can be below half of the second, depending on the memory settings. You have to test and that it's comparable. But of course, GraalVM, it's Java runtime, but it's not managed Java. So in order to have GraalVM, you need a custom runtime, AWS, and then you'll need to package the native image within the custom runtime.
So does the usage of GraalVM, does that improve both the cold start time and also the warm start performance of a Lambda function?
I would say no, warm start, not because ahead of time is not that optimized like just-in-time compilation. So you lose a bit, but you improve a lot on the cold start. This is the trade-off because Java optimizes aggressively. People suggest not to use this optimization because this optimization also costs you memory because there is thread that is optimizing during the execution. It costs you time and performance, but ahead of time compilation doesn't have that stuff. So you will lose a bit of performance on the warm-up phase, but you also don't need too much memory. In the end, you need to test. It depends on your use case. You can decide.
Of course, there's always a trade-off and it always depends. So let's talk about SnapStart. I know you are an expert in it. You've done a lot of work in and around it. And I don't think I could find anyone that knows more about the actual usage of SnapStart than you.
Yeah, there are people like Mark Sales from AWS itself who taught me a lot and corrected. I'm now writing the article for German magazine, Java magazine, about AWS SnapStart. And thanks to Mark, I learned a lot and even corrected my own understanding. So yeah, it was released during the keynote on reInvent by Peter DeSantis. He's talking about infrastructure more. And now he talked about cold starts in Java. And I was, okay, Java got attention and got even into this first keynote. It was only released for Java now, even for 11.17. That's the two long-term versions. They say it can help also for C-sharp application and for other programming languages having the same problem. So how it works underneath, there is a technology named CREU, which is more or less in the Linux world since 2012, and it's used for migrating containers. So this is the snapshot of the container and then restoring that, possibly on another machine. So they store the memory, all these counters, so the whole state of the application. What AWS did, they built upon that and they make the snapshot of the whole firecracker there and then restore it. And what they did, so how they use it, when you enable SnapStart on the function level and you deploy your function for the first time after the code change and you enable SnapStart, they do the snapshotting after in this deployment phase and they do call initialization phase. So they go through all steps of the cold starts, but not calling the handler. And then they snapshot and then they save the snapshot in the deployment phase. Of course, that means the deployment phase takes more. It takes 2 minutes more currently per function. And then you first run your function with a snapshot enabled, then the snapshot will be restored. And then the warm execution kicks in. So the assumption is that the snapshot restore takes significantly less time than the cold start, like container start, downloads a tree image, Java runtime start, then initialization phase. It also takes time, these seconds. And it's really the case that it takes less time. So my measurements, only by simply enabling SnapStart on the function, I could save more than 50% on the cold start. So my cold starts were 1.2 seconds for realistic applications from 3 to 5 seconds, only by enabling it. Yeah, so it's a huge improvement. But of course, now you have the developer experience that the deployment of the function takes longer. Yeah, this is something, of course, you don't test it locally and all that stuff. But anyway, there are some caveats with that. If you have something like, I'm not invoking it for 2 weeks, if it becomes too cold, then they create SnapStart upon the first call after 14 days. And then you can run into 2 minutes cold starts because snapshot takes 2 minutes. So that's kind of the trade-off. So you need to think about your invocation pattern. For me, it was the question, like, if you don't find the snapshot, do normal Java cold start, which takes seconds and yeah, in parallel create it. But this may be edge cases, they will solve it. But of course, SnapStart has some limitations. It doesn't work if you use Elastic File System on the S3. Not everybody uses that. It doesn't work with ARM architecture, only with x86. It doesn't work with provision concurrency. Now, if you just want to pre-provision warm images, then SnapStart doesn't work. Maybe they don't need to work together because pre-provision stuff is another solution for the cold starts. Don't mix.
So let me ask you a question, just to very shortly paraphrase what SnapStart is. With certain Java functions, you can enable it. And when you deploy, the Lambda service will run the init phase on the function and then take a snapshot of that Firecracker VM. So future executions can just start from that snapshot that's already been initialized.
Yeah, that's what I talked about 7 minutes and you did well by summarizing in 5 seconds.
Well, I've done my homework on it. But here's a question for you. One of the AWS best practices with Lambda functions is creating your SDK clients that connect to, say, DynamoDB or SNS outside of that main handler, which means they create these connections with the service in that init phase. Now, these connections have timeouts. If they're inactive for a certain amount of time, the connections break for obvious reasons. Well, how does that have come into play with SnapStart? If you have a SnapStart image that's been created for longer than whatever this timeout is, what happens?
So AWS Java SDK has been modified that you don't need to do anything. So the connection will be reestablished and it's done really, really quick. They optimize Java APIs, so you don't need to take care of it. But of course, where you need to think about is like you may have caches that are time-based. And if you restore, then something won't be in cache anymore. Then up to you how to handle this. There are also other stuff with random APIs. If you use AWS Coreto GDK, they patched a lot there that all these edge cases will not hit you. And in case you're using managed Java, it's then Coreto anyway. So they did amazing job. So AWS did amazing job that you don't stumble upon all the cases. And, but of course, people are sometimes cautious also because it's a lot of magic involved to be sure and all that stuff and connections reset and all that. It should be also quicker, very quick. Otherwise, you replicate the cold start anyway.
For sure. That's one of the things I love probably the most about the cloud, specifically with managed services, is that you can use a service and it will continue to get better and optimized over time without you having to do anything. Like this SDK updates that they made for Java to rebuild the connections with SnapStart. You didn't have to do anything. You might have had to upgrade your SDK version, but it has done a lot of that heavy lifting for you automatically, where you have to, you know, bump up a package number. Super nice.
Maybe I will say also some words about this priming optimization technique.
Sure.
So what is priming? Priming is some expensive operation that you can pre-initialize. And with SnapStart, it pays well because you can pre-initialize that in the deployment phase before the snapshot is taken. One of these people know, for example, is the creation of DynamoDB client. Client is one step, but if you first time call something which retrieves the item from the table, then Java needs to convert Java object to JSON and then to store it in DynamoDB, then back from JSON. And this takes 1 second for the first call to initialize the stuff pre-warm. In the lifecycle of Java, it happens once. And with priming, you can fake a call like DynamoDB table get item with ID 0. And it will kick this optimization. It doesn't matter if this item with ID 0 is there. The main thing is just that the preloading will happen and all that stuff, because these libraries are more or less for long-term usage for this JSON and all this marshallers, unmarshallers, serializers, deserializers. And this is one of the optimization technique that you can use. In my example, I could then save the on-call starts for 1.5 seconds, then back to 500, because that took exactly that time. Of course, then added a bit on deployment phase, because then it happened before snapshot. But this is also one of the challenges. It requires you to understand the underlying things that you can optimize. Normally, I don't want to think about it. And now it helps me if I know what I can do with it. Maybe the use case that you cannot optimize like this. If you don't use DynamoDB, use SQS, probably you cannot optimize because there is no such a thing like this conversion. But nevertheless, you need to know this and you need to write some import, even if it's only one line, more or less. And this is something where it makes it heavy. And I know that there are open source initiatives that they analyze what services that you're using and this priming will be applied on your behalf, something sensible to you. And yeah, we have these techniques like GraalVM native image, but now it's ahead of time compilation with that sort of challenges. We have SnapStart to get probably the most of it. You need to think, will priming be useful for you and just analyze what you are doing, thinking about what you can pre-initialize. But normally it doesn't matter where you initialize it, but in the serverless world, it matters because you would like to get most of the things before the snapshot is taken. And this is kind of a big challenge because it requires you to think more than you usually do. And you would like to write the code and sometimes it just doesn't matter. There are milliseconds and all. In the serverless world, it matters, especially for cold start. But nevertheless, from my perspective, I think it's good if you have the choice. And with GraalVM native image and SnapStart, you have the choice. And now with this proactive initialization that AWS seems to apply, you need to analyze, do you need all of that or just simple Java will do? Yeah, if you have only 0.2% of invocations are cold starts, then you may say, yeah, that's okay. I can live with that. Yeah, with 1%, maybe not, depending on the use case, but if proactive optimization kicks in and reduces it even better.
Totally agree. Now, I have one final question for you based on everything we've discussed. Given the current capabilities of Java with serverless, is it worth learning? Or is time better spent learning scripted languages like Python or Node.js?
I think it's good to have a choice and to be aware of the choice. And yeah, you mean Java programming language is just mature. It's very mature. It's just a lot of attention from Oracle if you have your Java developers doing your stuff and they are productive. And I think the productivity of developers is the most factor of the software company. And yeah, probably everybody agrees with the benefits of serverless. Then go with Java, analyze your options, decide and just test it out. It depends on the knowledge. If you have people who worked previously with GraalVM, it helps because there are tweaks that you can optimize. You need to be aware. For example, the whole Twitter, as far as I know, it runs on Scala. And they use GraalVM optimization for Scala because Scala is just compiled to JVM anyway. And it's not the quickest one, but with the GraalVM, a lot of in native image optimizations kick in, so they gained a lot. So depending on your experience, depending on your culture to do things, I can always just say, okay, if you're now thinking first time to move to serverless and you have AWS and then also then serverless first, and you have Java developers, it's a very good place to use it. They just don't need to think, oh, it's a barrier. No, I think you will have a bunch of success. It's not about 100 milliseconds more of the call start. It's not, as we talked about, seconds or double digit seconds, that was scary. Nobody wanted it. But now it's different. So Spreak library provides native image support. So now you have options to tackle that. So stay with Java, I would say, in that situation. Yeah. And if you're successful with another language, I don't think that there is a reason to move to Java or other language anyway.
Got it. Well said. We are out of time now. So if anybody has questions for you, Vadim, or wants to follow up with anything Java related or serverless related, because you do both, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Well, I'm active on Twitter, probably too active, posting all that stuff, also architecture. So I have the unique surname, so you can only find me. In several cases, my son, Dennis, but with that, I think easy to find on LinkedIn, on Twitter, and so on. My Gmail address, email address is very simple, vvadim.katsulkin, my surname, @gmail.com. So you can drop me a question, or otherwise, let's be connected via LinkedIn and have the conversation there or in the Twitter. My DMs are open.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time and your knowledge. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan, for having me.
We'll talk to you later. That's it for this episode of the Ready, Set, Cloud podcast. Be sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts to stay up to date on the latest episodes. For more info on trending cloud topics, be sure to visit readysetcloud.io and sign up for the Serverless Picks of the Week newsletter. I'm Alan Helton, and we're out of here. If you wanna hear you go.